We simply cannot allow people to pour into the United States undetected, undocumented, unchecked.
And complete the dang fence.
This bill that we will sign today is not a revolutionary bill.
Cast down your bucket where you are.
We come from France.
And I am, adamantly against illegal immigrants.
They're coming in by the thousands. Just unbelievable.
A wall is an immorality.
Who are you rooting for?
Those masters of the universe are at it again.
You maniac! You blew it up!
Welcome to Parsing Immigration Policy, the podcast of the Center for Immigration Studies. My name is Mark Krikorian, Executive Director of the Center. And today we're going to talk about some basic but really important things, and that is numbers. We have a new report out, co-authored by Steve Camerata and Karen Ziegler, our number crunching team, giving the latest numbers on the foreign-born population, how many, but also what their share of the population and various other things. And this is kind of the starting point, really, or should be, of any discussion of immigration. Because if there were 14 immigrants in the country, who cares? We wouldn't even be in this business. But there aren't. And so the discussion often will focus on all kinds of things, whether it's security, whether it's criminality, whether it's the illegal immigrants who came here as young children, and now they're excelling, all of those things. They're all fine, all legitimate topics to talk about and important topics. The starting point always has to be numbers. And for that, we have with us this week, Steve Camerata, our director of research, who is co-author of the update on the size and growth of the immigrant population in the United States. Steve, thanks for coming in. And what's kind of the top thing that people should take from this report?
Yeah, I guess the first thing you might say is we've never been here before. We're in uncharted territory, and we continue to head further and further into uncharted territory, both in terms of the overall size of the immigrant population at over 51 million, but also its share of the population at 15.5%. We've never been here before. The prior records have all been surpassed. The ones in 1890 or 1910, the old top periods of in terms of the foreign-born share or percentage of the population, but we've blown past that now, and it looks like that's just going to continue without any slowdown.
Without any change in policy, anyway, it would just continue. Yeah. So
exactly.
The number, obviously, I won't say obviously, but it's sort of obviously going to be the biggest number ever because, the population increases and immigrants come here. And so the number is always going to go up. And so one thing I want to ask is, how is the number important as well as the percentage? But the percentage, as you said, really is beyond anything we've experienced before. And that was always an argument that people who poo-pooed concerns about immigration said, well, it's not as big as the percentage was back during the Great Wave, and that all worked out, so what are you worried about? But we're actually not there anymore.
No, that's a great point. Let me do this, though, Mark, and tell the listeners exactly where the data is coming from very briefly.
Sure, okay. Good.
The data here is the monthly current population survey, also referred as the household survey. And it is collected each month by the Census Bureau for the Bureau of Labor Statistics, mainly to get things like the unemployment rate or the labor force participation rate. It's where we get a lot of those kinds of numbers. So if you see a statistic that says, men's unemployment rate is X, it's coming from this survey. It's released on an extremely timely basis to outside researchers like myself so that we can actually use it to begin looking at data almost immediately after it has finished being collected. And since 1994, they've asked things like citizenship, country of birth, when did you come to the United States? So we now have 30 plus years of data on this. So what I think Mark's alluding to is just how important numbers can be, not just percentages. At 51.4 million, we've never been here before. In 2010, say it was 40 million. In 1990, it was less than 20 million. So you could see something extraordinary has happened in recent decades. And that extraordinary story of growth in numbers is massively accelerated just since January of 2021, when President Biden took over. So the number of immigrants in the United States is up 4.6 million. I mean, that's an extraordinary number.
In just three years.
That is equal to the previous 9 years of growth pre-COVID. In other words, it's almost like a decade's worth of immigration in terms of growth in just a three-year period. Nothing's ever happened like that before. These numbers are truly, in many ways, unprecedented. Why numbers matter, even though the population, of course, is larger now than it was 20 years, 30, 50, 100 years ago? Because if you have concerns about, say, assimilation and linguistic isolation that can result when you have very large foreign language speaking populations, it isn't just a matter of what fraction the immigrants are, the foreign language speakers are, of a city. What also matters is just sheer numbers, right? That creates the economies of scale and allows people to live their whole lives in linguistic isolation or linguistic enclave and never have to really master English because the numbers are now so big. So even if immigrants are 10% of the local population or 30% of the population, those things matter. But a million immigrants either way is a lot of people in a city, and that can create a kind of insular population. And if you have a desire to see assimilation, integration, and so forth, then that can be an enormous hindrance. So I think when thinking about these things, the idea that the only thing that matters is their share of the population, which of course is past all prior records, is not the only thing that matters. The numbers themselves matter a great deal. And when we look at these numbers, they really are extraordinary.
You were talking about the growth in the immigrant population, that it's grown about 4.5 million. So roughly, if you average it out, something like 1.5 million a year.
I'm sorry, not to correct you, Mark.
Okay,
it's grown 6.4 million since January of 2021.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So you're looking at over 2 million growth a year.
The point I want to tease out here is that that's growth. Actually, more people arrived because there's always some people who leave too, right? If you explain that a little bit.
Yes, I think that's an important point. So what we're talking about here, when we say, oh, it grew 6.4 million, that's extraordinary. It's much more extraordinary than it maybe it even seems, although that growth is unprecedented, because for the number to grow like that, you have to have considerably more people come in. Why, you say? Well, because every year some people, of course, natural human mortality, which is now around 300,000 a year among the existing foreign-born. So every year the foreign-born, if no new people came in, would decline by 300,000 just because natural mortality among the population, they're human beings. In addition, we know that some fraction of illegal immigrants, usually numbering in the hundreds of thousands, go home each year. Some get deported, though that's less than it used to be under the current regime, but still some are getting deported. But more importantly, lots of people go home on their own. They reach retirement age and want to return to the home country. They finish their study or career in the United States and want to go back and live in their home country, or they want to go home to raise their family. All of this kind of voluntary out-migration totals hundreds of thousands of people each year, plus just natural mortality means that in general, we would assume that the foreign-born would fall by 600,000 or more a year at least. And that's very, conservative, that 300,000 out-migration.
If there's no newcomers.
If there's no newcomers, right. Exactly. But that's, so if it grows 6.4 million, it implies at least 7 million, maybe 8 million new people arrived. The data also probably misses people. That's the other thing. The survey's not perfect. I have a discussion in the paper of some of the issues with the data and the way the Census Bureau is approaching this question. But even taken at its own terms, and even forgetting about the people missed by the survey, the growth is extraordinary and really never before seen.
So one of the questions people are always going to ask, and this is something that politicians often immediately turn to, is that this is all illegal immigration. So obviously some of this is, your report shows, you kind of come up with estimates and you qualify it properly because this is all more to some degree art as well as science, but it's not just illegal immigration that's causing this, correct?
Absolutely. That's right, Mark. Legal immigration rebounded after COVID, and that was kind of to be expected. We didn't change policy. We have the most generous legal immigration system of the world in the world. Over 1 million green cards, that's permanent residency, is given out each year. The United States welcomes hundreds of thousands of foreign students, guest workers, cultural exchange. So the flow of people into the United States resumed. And that's important because how do we have any idea what the illegal population is? Well, We know much, not all of it, but most of that administrative data is available. So we have a pretty good idea of how many people came in legally, and then we can look at the growth in the foreign-born or the number of foreign-born and so forth and begin to make some comparisons and arrive at reasonable estimates of how many illegal immigrants are in the data. And when we do that, it looks like about 3.7 million of the 6.4 million, or well more than half, of the growth is illegal immigrants. Now, again, these are net numbers, not new arrivals, and there most certainly is some undercount. Putting aside the undercount for a minute, putting aside, you know, the people who get missed, again, these numbers on their face are extraordinary.
So this is, just to reiterate, this is a three-year period you're looking at. So we're talking about a growth in the illegal population of more than 1 million a year, if you average it out. You haven't done an estimate yet of the total or fully articulated estimate, a new one of the size of the illegal population, but what does it seem like it's grown from under the Biden administration?
Right. So if you adjust for undercount, we think that the illegal population is probably maybe a little over 14 million now. But that undercount, we have a lot of questions which we discuss. And it was more like 10.2 million when Biden
took office, we think. Okay.
So, you know, you're looking at somewhere around 4 million growth. It could be more. We're not finished all of that, but it's fair to say the growth in the illegal population is unprecedented. And remember, many more people, let's say it grew by 4 million over this time period, roughly. It did, at least, in this data. But again, more people than that, significantly more came, but some went home. Also, when it comes to illegals, it's always important to remind listeners that a significant number are allowed to legalize within the United States each year, in effect creating a kind of out-migration from illegal status to legal status. Some who marry an American, some who fly home to pick up their visa, some who get asylum. So there is a movement out of the illegal population that's substantial, and that also offsets. And remember, this is also another basic fact. It should be obvious, but always needs to remember. All births in the United States to immigrants, to the native-born population, not the foreign-born. It's, of course, obvious, but that's different than any other human population that we usually think of. These individuals, when they have a child in the United States, all those children are U.S. citizens. You could debate the wisdom of that. You could argue constitutional questions. But the fact is, right now, by definition, you can only grow the foreign-born by new additions. And that's one of the reasons which makes these numbers so extraordinary indeed.
Now, talking about the numbers, before, because you did some other analysis of education level and stuff, and I think that's worth talking about. But before we get to that, you also kind of projected what the situation would look like at the end of a second Biden term, assuming trends continue, and you never know. And just to clarify, we don't get involved in electoral politics, but this is an important analysis. If the current trends continue, what numbers did you come up with for the end of a second Biden-Harris term?
Right. So just doing a linear projection based on the first 3 years of the Biden presidency, you would reach about 60 million foreign-born by the time he would leave office in 2028. At the end of 2028, that would mean that the foreign-born grew 15 million.
Wow.
During his presidency, which again is extraordinary. Remember, that's not that different than what the whole foreign-born was back in 1990. In addition, the foreign-born percentage would be 17.5%. Again, just assuming current trends forward. And again, of course, that would be completely unprecedented because the prior record was less than 15% back in 1890 at 14.8%.
Right.
Both, again, would be without any precedent.
So what is one of the things you found out about what the makeup is of the population? Because that seems to have changed under Biden, and then we'll talk about some of the possible reasons for that. But how has the makeup of the immigrant flow changed?
Yeah, so I think the way to summarize it is the immigrant population is an unprecedented size, an unprecedented growth, and it is increasingly Latin American. It's increasingly illegal, and partly related to those two facts, it's increasingly less educated.
And the interesting thing here, sorry to interrupt, but that sort of people who aren't marinated in the issue all the time would just assume, well, that's what immigration is anyway. In other words, how is this a change? What was it like before that this somehow represents a change?
Right. No, it's not true. Remember, when we're looking at the total immigrant or foreign-born population, yes, it's true that a significant component are less educated. That is, people without a lot of education. But it is certainly not the trick case that you would say that immigrants just generally are all less educated or mostly less educated.
Or all Latin American.
Or Latin American, that's right. So a little less than half or significantly less than half of new arrivals. These are the people in the data who are immigrants who said they came in the last few years. And when we look at that, we do see quite an interesting change. As recently as 2018, only about a third of new arrivals were from all of Latin America. Now, it had been about 55, 56% a decade earlier, a little more than a decade earlier, but that was not the case by 2018, as the fraction who are of newcomers were from Latin America had declined quite a bit. And by 2018, it was less than a third were from Latin America. That's all changed. In 2024, in February of 2024, again, that's where this data comes from. If you look at the two prior years, the people who said they arrived in the two prior years, we're now at 55% Latin American. And that's a very clear indication of the growing importance of illegal immigration. Again, clearly not all immigrants from Latin America are illegal immigrants. And we get illegal immigrants from areas other than Latin America. However, the growth in the Latin American population is heavily impacted by the arrival of new illegal immigrants. And of course, that's what's happening. And because that region tends to have less educated migrants, or the people who come from those countries tend to be less educated than immigrants from other, though not all others, but other parts of the world, as Latin America and illegal immigrants make up a bigger share of new arrivals, the education levels of the overall immigrant population, if we look at everybody coming in, will fall. Even though, again, it's always important to note that there are many educated immigrants. In fact, as recently as 2018, 55% of all immigrants who are arriving in the United States in the two prior years to 2018, so these recent arrivals in 2018, 55% had at least a bachelor's degree. However, that has fallen quite a bit, and so now it's only 41%. So less than half, well less than half of new arrivals have at least a bachelor's degree now. But that wasn't true just a few years ago. At the same time, if we look at immigrants who have only a high school education, no additional schooling, or less, that is their high school dropouts, that was down to 29% in 2018, but now it's 44%. So a very substantial increase in the bottom end and a deterioration at the top end might be a way to summarize. So that is one of the big changes. Now, you might say, well, that's interesting, I suppose, but why is that important? Well, the reason educational attainment and the education level of new arrivals is so important is because education, well, for decades now, has been the single best predictor of how people, not just immigrants, will do in the modern American economy. I mean, it turned out your mom was right when she told you to stay in school. What people with a college degree, what people with at least some college, and so forth, as you move up the education distribution, earn is always higher than the group below them. The evidence is overwhelming, and that impact, the importance of education, has tended to get greater in recent decades, so that the more educated earn a lot more than the least educated, and that was not quite the case, you know, a generation, two or three ago. So how immigrants do in the United States is heavily, but not exclusively, impacted by their education levels, you know, when they arrive. We're looking at adults here, by the way. So if you want to know whether immigrants are likely to earn a lot, what kind of jobs they're going to do, if they're going to pay a lot in taxes, if they're paid on the books, if they're going to use a lot in public services, the single best predictor of all those things is education level. If you want to know how their children are going to do, educational attainment is important. It's not the only thing by any means that matter, but, you know, if you want to know whether someone is likely to graduate high school, if their parents graduated high school, is a pretty good predictor of that. If you want to know if kids are going to go on to college and graduate from college, one of the best predictors of that is whether their parents did so. So this decline in education level has immediate impacts on things like public coffers or what kind of jobs immigrants are going to do and where they're going to be in the labor market, who they might compete with, but also probably long-term because it has this intergenerational effect. And that doesn't make immigrants unusual. It's true of the U.S. born, but a decline in immigrant education has a lot of implications for the country.
Now, you dealt with what you're talking about here is that the share of immigrants with less education has actually grown under Biden. And you didn't deal with this other part, but I was just wondering, do we have any ideas on why, like during, I guess you would say during the Obama and Trump administrations, not to imply that there was a cause here, but that was the time frame, the share of immigrants from Latin America went down, the share of immigrants with college degrees went up. Researchers must have some idea of why that was happening.
Well, the short answer is all over the world, education levels have been rising, even in the least developing countries. And in all the primary sending countries, the fraction of people who complete high school or go on for some college or get a college degree or a graduate degree, everywhere it's increasing.
Right.
It might be an exception. I don't know, true of North Korea, but the
right.
point is
or
that's
Yemen
a pretty-
Yemen or someplace.
Yeah, maybe in Manati, in a country, a war-torn country like Yemen. But in general, that is a very obvious and strong finding. And in that context, that's been reflected in immigrants coming here. So even illegal immigrants who come to America today versus 30 years ago are more educated, as mm-hmm. are legal immigrants, as is the native-born population. That's really an important
sure.
point. So the native-born population has become dramatically more educated in the last 20, 30, even 10 years. So the point here is that what's happened is, although immigrants from everywhere are more educated now, and we're talking about just the newcomers, that the illegals still are well behind the legals. And because they make up such a large share of new arrivals, it's pulling the overall average down quite a bit. And so that's what we're reporting. So again, it was once the case that well more than half of new arrivals had at least a college degree, maybe a graduate degree, and that's down to 41% now. And I should point out that as best we can tell, this probably began a little earlier in 2018 and 2019. It looks like there was some decline in the education level. Not sure if that's a real decline or just sort of sampling variability, but it looks like maybe something else might be going on here. And obviously, most of what we're talking about is the spectacular growth in illegal immigration, or if you like the term, migrants better. But maybe that's not the whole story, and so further investigation would be needed.
You explored some of the possible reasons for this extraordinary growth. Seems to me pretty obvious it has something to do with the President Biden's border policies, but you kind of teased it out in a little more detail, not necessarily with definitive answers, but sort of seeming to trying to look at what was probably going on. If you could talk about that a little.
Yeah, sure. So one possibility, and I won't go into much, is look, this is just a resumption of prior trends. We look at prior trends. Obviously, there's no reason that legal immigration had to resume or that illegal immigration.
Oh, no, it's after COVID. This is like a bounce back after COVID is what some people say.
It didn't have to, obviously. Legal immigration is set by Congress. But even if you take that point of view, it does not appear that what we're seeing is simply a return to prior trends. We're well above prior trend lines. But the more obvious answer is the one that you might imagine. Now, it is true that we have, you know, Bobby, by now it is 9 million. 9 million border encounters at all the borders in the United States or all the places people may enter.
Under Biden
since January of 2021. So if you have 9 million, that's many more than we've had in the past. But I don't think that number is that meaningful because it doesn't tell us how many have been released. It doesn't tell you how much is the same person being returned and then trying again and things like that. So I think what we want to really focus in on is the new additions. And when we look at that, there we see a picture that is just extraordinary. So, for example, as best we can tell based on information that Congress has uncovered, the administration has released into the United States about 3.3 million illegal immigrants. These are asylum applicants. These are parolees. These are minors being released to be with their parents. So there's never been anything like it. Yes, prior administrations have, to some extent, released people. So it would not be fair to say that this has never, nothing like that. But this is unprecedented. And it seems, of course, all related to the massive number of people who've shown up at the border. And obviously, the president made campaign promises and perception was created in many of the primary sending countries before he took office that he would curtail enforcement. He promised to end the program that was COVID-related called Title 42 that sent people back immediately across the Mexican border, even when they weren't Mexican. He promised to end it. He started to end it when he came in, and then eventually he did fully end it. He ended the asylum cooperation agreements we have with the Central American countries to try to discourage people moving through those countries to come to the United States to apply for asylum, instead perhaps apply for asylum there. He also ended the program, the Migrant Protection Protocols, or the Remain in Mexico policy, where a fraction or significant share of asylum applicants would wait in Mexico, at least for some of their court dates or hearing. So the decision to end all that, people learned. He also has curtailed interior enforcement. The administration, just to be clear, could have held, especially initially, before the numbers got too big, many more asylum applicants. They chose not to do that either and release them.
Detention, in other words.
Detention, yeah. Right. They can hold them in detention. And at the same time, I think it's important to note, they could have used a procedure called expedited removal to send a fraction back to their home countries more quickly. They chose not to do that either. And once word got out that if you showed up at the border, the prospect of being released to the United States was very high, particularly if you claimed asylum or had a child with you or qualified in some other way based on the policies of the administration, the border became completely overwhelmed. And once it became overwhelmed, it began to be very difficult to stop anyone. So during the Biden presidency, again, since January 2021, the number of what they call gotaways, people who are seen entering, but we can't stop or turn back. Usually this is on cameras, but because we're processing all these other individuals at the border, or the person was in a remote area or what have you, is 1.7 million. So if you want to know, one of the key things that's driving up the numbers is the 1.7 million gotaways plus 3.3 million people released. And these are pretty conservative estimates, but even so, that's 5 million right there. There has to be perhaps a million people who made it past the Border Patrol unseen. That number could be anything. We really don't know. But given the scale of the number of people showing up at the border, you'd have to add at least a million in. And as I say, no one has ever released 3.3 million people in a three-year period like that, or more than a million a year. The number of gotaways on an annualized basis is 4 to 5 times what it was in the years before President Biden took over and then before COVID. So the gotaways, the releases, they're just without any precedent. We have the people who make it past the Border Patrol. So there's that. And in addition to that, we also have visa overstays. Now, we don't have up-to-date data on that, but you have to assume the most recent report is for FY 2022, and that number was over 800,000. We don't know what share actually stayed long-term and joined the illegal population, but typically it's a couple hundred thousand. So you got 3 years of visa overstays on top of all that. It's not ridiculous to say 6-7 million new illegal immigrants arrived in the United States. Again, that number is offset by out-migration deaths and legalizations. Still, that number is enormous. And then on top of that, again, you have legal immigration and long-term temporary immigration. So the scale of immigration to the United States is truly enormous. And these monthly data are picking up much of it, but perhaps missing a significant portion as well.
A couple of number things I wanted to finish up with. Just one stat, you have it in here. The average increase per month in the total foreign-born population, it really kind of hits home the differences between, frankly, on the one hand, the Obama and Trump administrations, which was, you know, Obama led it. It grew faster under him, but in a sense, those clumped together in a way that the monthly increase in the size of the foreign-born population under Biden just blows both of those away.
Yeah, that's a great point. So under President Obama, you had about a growth in the foreign-born that was very substantial, about 68,000 a month on average in his 8 years. Under President Trump is about 42,000, and that's before COVID. The numbers fell during COVID. The actual number of immigrants in the United States seems to have declined, at least in this data. But we'll put that aside. If you go from the time Trump took office to right before COVID, you're looking at about 42,000 a month growth pre-COVID. And under President Biden, it's 172,000. So many times, more than double even what it was under Obama, and several times what it was under President Trump. So really extraordinary numbers.
And one thing I thought that translates into something, and you had said that the Census Bureau tries to project, look in the future, what's likely, you know, sort of what's the most likely trend in the number of and percentage of immigrants, say, whatever, you know, some number of years from now. The immigration under Biden has been so large that those projections are now wrong or out of date. Is that correct?
Yeah, or at the very least, it would be fair to say they're obsolete. The Bureau put out new projections of the size and growth of the U.S. population, including the foreign-born population, through the end of next century, or this century, I should say, through the end of this century. And what they had said, and this is just from November of last year, so it's not very old, they had thought that the foreign-born would hit 15.5% of the population at some point, but not until 2039. So, you know.
2039.
They're 2039.
Wow. 15 years from now, basically.
Right. That's what they thought. And so that gives you an idea of just no one foresaw this and why it's wrong to think of this as sort of outside of human agency or just like the weather. Oh, what do you know? What happened? The rest of the world is experiencing migration. This level of migration, this level of growth, as revealed by this data, is clearly represents policy changes that caused it. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to end the...
If I could mention one
more
thing, Mark.
Go ahead,
sure,
yeah.
Sure. So I'd like to talk about just one other thing. A lot of people, including the president, have said, look, we're adding all these people. And yeah, okay, some of them, a lot of them, most of them are illegal. But it's causing our economy to grow. And really, isn't that a good thing? And so not to worry. Now, it's certainly correct, and I do the calculations in the report, and you can read them, to argue that U.S. GDP is larger, that is gross domestic product, the aggregate size of the U.S. economy is larger. And if you add up all the immigrant workers and the new workers, the growth in the immigrant workers and what they earn, it's clear that you do a few other calculations that the U.S. economy, as a consequence over the last 3 years of the growth in the immigrant population, is at least $300 billion larger. So yes, that's about 1% larger. So that's something. However, immigration has also caused the population to grow. And what matters in economics is not the aggregate size of the economy, it's per capita or per person GDP, gross domestic product. If all that mattered was the size of the economy, then we'd say, well, India is a much richer country than Sweden because its economy is bigger. But of course, we don't say that because the per capita, what each person has in Sweden, is much higher than in India. So when you try to do that calculation, you see that immigration actually reduces per person GDP in the United States because, again, it added about 1% to U.S. GDP, but the growth in the immigrant population is equal to about 2% of our population. And the CBO, who I cite in this report, discusses this point in its projections too, that immigration makes the economy bigger, but it also lowers per capita GDP. And I think that's an important point. To just look at the aggregate size of the economy is a misnomer. It's like looking at all the taxes you take in and never considering what you're spending money on as a country, right? It's that kind of thing. Well, the tax revenue's up, surely everything's fine. Well, no, it depends if you're spending a lot more money. Well, it's the same thing here. You've got to look at the big picture. And when we do that, we see that it's not at all clear this is a benefit. In fact, it's lowering per capita GDP. Though I should point this out. We know, and what economic theory suggests and what is happening, is that most of the increase in economic activity anyway goes to the immigrants themselves in the forms of wages and benefits and other compensation, as it should, since they're the ones doing the work. But again, to think that added GDP that immigrant workers create is an obvious benefit to the population that's already here is simply wrong. And unfortunately, that kind of simplistic understanding of economics is all too common among our leaders.
So thanks, Steve. The report we've been talking about is online, and we'll have the link in the show notes. The foreign-born share and number at record highs in February 2024. You know, the idea that we have blown past where the Census Bureau thought we were going to be, the immigrant population was going to be 15 years from now, we've already exceeded that, really does, I think, strike home how big the phenomenon, how unusual and unprecedented the situation we're in now due to the Biden administration policies. So the report's there if anybody's interested, and we will have Steve back in the future to talk about more number crunching on other issues and on this issue. Thanks for coming, Steve.
Thanks for having me.
Finally, this week, I wanted to draw attention to something we've been writing about a lot, but an aspect that we haven't. And this is this program, CHNV programs, often called, for a parole program for Cubans, Haitians, Nicaraguans, and Venezuelans to enable them to not even bother having to illegally cross the border. This administration is illegally giving them travel authorization to fly into the United States, into interior airports in the United States. And our Todd Bensman has written a great deal about this. We have a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit ongoing. But there's an aspect of it that Andrew Arthur on our staff shone a light on that I thought was worth highlighting. And that is that this program, which is bringing in so far more than like a third of a million people, again, all of them inadmissible aliens who have no right to come here. But there's also these claims, first of all, that there's robust vetting done of these people. And even that topic is something we've written about, and even lawmakers and others have commented on extensively, that how robust can vetting be if somebody's coming from Haiti where there's no government? Where are you going to get the information to vet them against? And the similar problem with people from Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela, which do have functional governments but are hostile to the United States and certainly aren't going to cooperate with us in trying to weed out bad guys. In fact, a Venezuelan, I think a retired judge, said that significant numbers of criminals from Venezuela were coming to the United States, and Venezuela is more than happy to have them come here rather than be in Venezuela. But again, even that issue is something that has been addressed at some length in the media by lawmakers. We've written about it as well. There was part of it that really struck me that I think was important to focus on, is that this parole program, again, for people from Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Venezuela, the Biden administration has illegally just concocted this thing and is giving people travel authorization, that one of the supposed checks on this, or one of the provisions that is purportedly makes this a tighter and more responsible program, is that the person coming here from abroad has to have a sponsor in the U.S. And that's supposed to reassure us that a sponsor is going to be responsible for the costs and what have you. And the implication, and sometimes the reality, is that this is a relative who's bringing in a relative and will be responsible for them. But in fact, the supporter, the sponsor, doesn't even have to be an individual. It doesn't have to be a relative, doesn't even have to be an individual. It could be an organization, a business. In fact, the regulation says organizations, businesses, and other entities qualify. So as Art Arthur put it in his blog post, and we'll have a link in the show notes, quote, if sweatshops or massage parlors are seeking cheap and docile workers, all they need to do is to identify willing applicants who are nationals of those countries, file the paperwork, and wait for the soon-to-be trafficking victims to arrive, unquote. This is a real thing. And if you imagine that that's not happening, you're not too familiar with the way this works. And even if it's not, say, a business trying to import servile labor, Stephen Dinan over at the Washington Times reported that there's already smugglers. He's calling them scammers. I'm not even sure it's technically even a scam if the people know what they're getting into, charging the migrant who wants to come here $5,000 or more in order to get a sponsor to sign up and say that they're willing to support them. And maybe they pay all of that money up front, or maybe they pay some of it up front and then pay off the rest. It's a kind of smuggling fee. So this is one more way that federal immigration law, but since this program is unlawful, has no connection to the law really, federal immigration policy under the Biden administration is actually not even just looking the other way, but actually facilitating smuggling and trafficking of people from abroad illegally into the United States. So this is a serious problem. In fact, the story in the Washington Times quotes Emilio Gonzalez, who was USCIS director under George W. Bush, and really nobody's idea of an immigration hawk. Nonetheless, he was quoted saying, if there's a way to monetize this, people will figure it out. This just stinks all over, unquote. It does indeed, and it's an inevitable outcome of the kind of rogue immigration policymaking that we're seeing with this administration, where they're using pretexts in the law, you know, going beyond anything that is permitted or even envisioned by people writing the law in order to allow as many people into the United States as possible, even if they end up being trafficked, even if they end up being criminals, even if they end up being terrorists. So unfortunately, the consequences of this are going to be with us for quite some time, even if the administration turns into a pumpkin next year and is replaced by a different one. The fallout of the Biden administration's immigration policies in this respect and in many other respects are going to be with us for years to come. That's all for this week's episode of Parsing Immigration Policy. This is Mark Krikorian, Executive Director of the Center, hoping that you tune in next week. Thank you.